Fred?
Yes, I'm here.
All righty, you're all set.
Fred.
Yes.
This is Ed.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. And then we have Bill, who's going to talk to you about the college days.
Okay.
And Mark is going to talk to you about the trips you've had.
Hi, Fred.
Hi, Mark.
I'm
Bill?
Going to test your memory today.
Okay. Is that Mark?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, it's great to hear your voice.
Well, good to hear yours. And Mary says hello.
Okay, good. Is she still painting?
Well, off and on, yes.
Okay.
Don't say me. Don't worry with me. Just go ahead and start.
Fred?
Yes.
Do we want to start with the questions, and then that'll give us a way to get into it?
All right, because you have to remember that I retired long before Lockheed Martin.
Oh, yeah. Well, we can just change from Lockheed Martin to Unisys or Univac or ERA or whatever.
ERA, Univac.
We're most interested in what your memories were when you were with ERA in the 40s and 50s.
Okay.
You want to start with your family? Is there anything that is not in the books that we should...
Well, I don't know. My son started out as a janitor with ERA Univac, or Univac Sperry, and he stayed with them for 38 years.
He did.
Eric.
That's Eric.
Yeah.
At Roseville.
Mm-hmm.
And then they closed the department just a few months ago, and that left him without a job.
Huh? Well, let's start with the some of the trips you were on with Mark. That should be very...
Oh, yeah, okay.
Well, Fred, as you probably remember, we went on very many interesting trips.
Oh, yeah, and you...
And one that stands out with Mary and myself is, you may recall that you went along with us on part of our honeymoon in 1956.
Oh, goodness.
We had... I was a schemer, so I had ERA or Sperry pay for part of my honeymoon trip, so I was doing business trips as part of my trip to Boston, New York City.
Oh, yeah.
This started out with a communications conference in Rome, New York, and I drove, and you met us there, and we both went to the conference. And on the way back, you rode with us from Utica back to New York City.
Okay.
And Mary remembers this very well because you had on this fancy cashmere suit, and you looked like a movie star.
Oh, goodness.
And anyway, that was one of the trips, and Mary was particularly excited about it because... She was in the motel and watched Don Larson's World Series no-hitter.
Oh, goodness.
Anyway, that's one of the first trips. Then another one that I put in the write-up was when you and I flew down to Warner Robins to call on, one of our good customers down there about maintenance.
Right.
And... Shortly after we got into the meeting, he got this call from the commanding general of the base. And the general, and of course, our host was a little nervous about this, but it turned out that the commanding general had heard your interview with Jack Parr, and when he knew you were coming to the base, he wanted to have lunch with you. So we all went to the officers' club and had lunch. That was in 1965. Do you recall that?
Oh, by all means, because the general was over in Port Moresby at the same time I was.
So you had an immediate connection.
Oh, yeah. He was with the Fifth Air Force.
I just thought he wanted to get some publicity for the local paper.
Oh, yeah. No, he was... unfortunately, he died before I have. And otherwise... otherwise I would be in touch with him right now. But, yes, I remember that well.
Well, then there's another one, which I think was in 1965 or somewhere around there, when you and I and Ernie Griffith had been to Port Monmouth to demonstrate the coupler, and it was around 6:30 at night, and we were crossing the Verrazano Bridge, and lo and behold, New York had its blackout.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And I remember that because I remember a lady parked in the area, and she was trying to find a slot to put her quarter in for the parking fee.
Anyway, we slowly drove up to Hartfield to go to Hartford to call on Sikorsky.
Oh, right.
And, of course, by the time we got up there, the blackout had gone away up there, so we had lights for the rest of the trip. But Ernie Griffith sat on the tarmac in an airplane for 6 hours before they took off.
Yeah.
So anyway, then I'm going to throw in a probably a little one of your embarrassing trips that you may recall. We had been, Mick Alsop was with us, and we had been to visit Lockheed, and I think you and Mick went to some resort over the weekend, and then we flew back on Monday morning and stopped off in Salt Lake. And you and Mick, they needed volunteers to get off the plane, so you and Mick decided to get off and go to the Mormon Tabernacle for a tourist review. So I flew in to Minneapolis, and lo and behold, who was there to meet you but your wife? And she said to us, "Where's Fred and Mick?" And I said, "Well, they stopped off in Salt Lake to see the sights." She wasn't very happy because she says it's very rare that I ever pick this guy up, and now the one time when I do, he's not here. You may not remember that.
Oh gosh, you've got such a sharp memory.
Yeah, my old memory's pretty good. My new memory's not so good. I keep losing stuff.
Oh gosh, well the main thing I did. We went to Germany and Paris to the conference, too. Do you remember
you,
that?
You with your wife or with Mick? Or
no, with you.
With me? Were you with some of our maintenance conferences?
Yes.
You might have been. Yeah, I joined when I came back in 63, and we sort of rebuilt the antenna coupler. Then we started going to a lot of these maintenance conferences. Bob Brown went to most of them.
Right, yeah.
And I'll tell you a joke about Bob Brown, which Mary remembers very distinctly. As you know, Bob Brown was our major technician and repair
right.
man. You know, went all over the world.
Right.
And he was having dinner with us one time with Mary, and I think Barry mentioned, how come Mark doesn't take you to Paris? And, I think Mary asked you, asked Bob Brown, how come Mark doesn't take you to Paris? And Bob, very, not very tactful, said, why would you take a sandwich to a banquet? you know how tart sometimes Bob Brown could be.
Yes,
but
right.
he was really terrific with the customer.
Yeah.
Well, then just one other one of interest. Well, there's two others. One was when we a lot of times when we went to visit Pan Am, we occasionally stayed in New York City, and we always stopped off at the United Nations, and we either had lunch or dinner with some of your friends there in the United Nations executive dining room. You recall that?
The one that was later on became the Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Well, you know, we got a paper here that recorded You're going back to New Guinea in 1969, where they must have dedicated the hospital or school.
Yes.
Got a lot of pictures with you, and there's a, you were given a plaque by a, I don't know if he was a governor, his name was Townsend.
Old Bill Townsend was the Air Vice Marshal from the RAAF.
Well, you're on the front page. This, you probably have this article. It's a four-page newspaper, and it's all dedicated to your visit in 1969. And there must be at least 20 pictures in.
Oh my goodness!
In that paper, I'm sure you have it in your archive someplace.
Yeah, I don't see it well anymore. So my filing is terrible.
I don't know what it is. What is the title of it, Ed? It's called the Air.
Airman's Log.
Airman's Log.
Oh, yeah, all right, yeah.
Report for 1969.
Yeah. Arnie had worked for advertising, and his account was for the Cadillac, and those people did that log sheet. Free for me. It was a beautiful job. Yeah.
Well, then just a couple of others. The other one, of course, was a highlight for me and probably for you as well, because we were very successful when we won the Antenna Coupler Award for the P3C.
Yeah.
And we had beat out the incumbent, which was Collins Radio. And that was quite an achievement because Collins even went to Boeing to sort of put us in disfavor by saying that the coupler is not part of Sperry, and if you go with Sperry, they're not going to be able to support the product. But nevertheless, we won that contract, and that coupler has been on that on that airplane for at least 20 more years.
Yeah, well, Mark, you had high regard by the engineering teams of all the customers that we went to. I mean, the airlines, and I think that was one reason because you helped their engineering teams design the proper installation.
Well, you might recall that when I came back in 63, the coupler had staff was down to Ben Swayze.
Right, yeah.
We had this terrific problem with Qantas, with the couplers failing whenever they flew through a moonsong. And Qantas and Charlie Cat were about to switch to Collins. So Mick Alsop and myself and Merlin Sanders had this met Charlie Cat at Boeing, and we had this three-day conference, and it was on the same weekend that Kennedy died. We flew out on a Sunday night, and for the next 3 days we would go to the hotel and watch the funeral. But anyway, being an engineer, you would realize that the solution to that problem was very simple. The discriminator diodes would burn out whenever there was a strike, because we had the circuit mounted on the printed circuit board. So it was very adjacent to arc over into where the diodes were. So we solved it simply by putting in two ceramic capacitors and lifted the transmission line off the board, and that solved the problem. In addition to that, we put in, and you remember him well, you were a good friend of Don Hamister for...
Oh, yeah, the light...
...many years. Is Don still with us?
I think so, yes. He's in Santa Barbara.
But Mary and I visited him about 4 years ago when we went to a wedding, and at that time, Mick Alsop was still around. How about Mick? Has he left?
No, Mick died...
shortly after, I guess.
Right, yes.
Well, you and Mick and Don were quite a threesome for your retirement year.
Oh yes, right. Yeah.
This was one. Well, the reason that friendship with Don started was because he provided these little lightning arrestor devices that we put on the boards to alleviate this discriminator problem.
Right.
I think solving that problem made a lifelong friend of all of us with Charlie Catt, the engineering head at Qantas.
Qantas, right.
Because yeah. didn't you and he spend a lot of time together? And
yes, and he, I think he died several years ago.
Well, he was quite a charmer.
Or he retired. He was a real pioneer out there because he was a radio operator, I think, when Qantas did their round the world flights or something with I forget the name of it. You've got such a good memory. How old are you? Do you mind telling me?
I'm going to be 80 next February.
Okay.
But I tell you, Fred, my mind is still young.
Yes, and it sure is. Amazing.
And speaking of one other thing you did for me, I don't know what you had in mind, but of course we know that your aunt worked for Joey Brown, so you had access when you were out at Lockheed doing the tests on all those aircraft to go out with all the movie stars and harlots, right?
Yeah.
And Linda Darnell.
Right, yeah.
And so on one of our trips, it was in 1955, and I think you thought I didn't have enough girlfriends, so on one of our trips to Los Angeles, you fixed me up with a starlet. Her name was Olga, I remember her, and we went out to a fancy restaurant in Beverly Hills, and I think you were with your sister. I think you took your sister, and we had a good dinner. And at that restaurant was one of the Gabor sisters. Hmm. You probably don't remember that, but I remember that quite well. Anyway, I'm going to close now so I don't monopolize this dialogue with you. But I have to say that working with you and the respect that the customers had for you was endless, and you deserve a lot of gratitude from Lockheed to making that our company great. So I'll sign off, and good luck to you.
Well, Mark, thank you, and you don't know how much we depended upon you to revive the antenna coupler program, and the fact that you had the highest respect of our customers, and I think that had a lot to do with our beating Collins.
You're right. That was fun. Really fun.
Okay. It was good to hear you.
Bill, do you want to talk about the school days?
Sure. Fred.
Yes. Very good morning, Bill.
Great to you, Fred. I was thinking that we probably first met in the fall of 37 when we were sophomores in an electrical engineering class.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. So anyhow, this morning I dug up the 1940 bomb, and you got more entries on the back than most people. And I learned one thing for the first time, or perhaps I'd forgotten it, but you were not only a swimmer and a fraternity man and an electrical engineer, but you were also on the staff of the bomb. You and another guy were reported on Town Life. And I've got to research and see what all you added to the bomb.
Oh, okay.
And the thing they don't mention that I recall was that we had this annual spring celebration called Visha, and I recall very distinctly the year that you impersonated Franklin Roosevelt.
Oh, Chris, I don't remember that, but that's interesting.
Yeah, I remember verbatim. Started out...
You were a Sigma Chi?
Yeah, you were representing the Sigma Chi's, I guess. Or the Phi Delts, no.
I was a Phi Delt.
Well, yeah, you represented them at Visha. I remember your monologue started out, I hate war.
Oh, That's, now I remember.
Billy hates war. He went down, finally their dog named Fowler. He said, Fowler hates war. So that stuck in my memory, right?
Yeah.
After college, you moved to New York City, and I moved to Philadelphia area, and I remember getting together a number of occasions. You introduced me to Greenwich Village, which was exciting in those days.
Oh, yeah. There was a restaurant we went to that had opera singers as waiters.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And one time they took me out on Long Island to meet a couple who were starting an early FM station out there.
That was when I was with Major Armstrong.
And let's see. Then I remember when I got to Australia, I wrote to you, and it turned out that you were in, I think you were over in Brisbane when I was in Perth.
Right, yeah.
That was in 42, and then I didn't hear from you again until 49, I think, when I showed up at an IEEE convention in New York, and here was a note on the bulletin board. Said, Butler, if you're in town, give me a call at this number.
Oh, goodness.
That's so that's how we got together again.
Yeah, when I was over in Inglewood.
Yeah. Then we both came to Minnesota at the same time, and you bought that. Was that an old farmhouse in Bald Eagle?
Yes.
I remember you had your Radio Shack in the loft of the barn.
Right. I was still listening for signals from Armstrong Station in Alpine.
Uh-huh. And then our wives got into the ERA Bridge Club, and that went on for many years. And,
right.
Kept us in touch that way. And then when you moved to California, we visited you, and you taught us how to prune your grapevines. We were very good at it, but at least it was an experience for us.
Right.
So, sure good to hear from you, Fred, and I hope this gets a good write-up somewhere.
Are you still working with your education program?
I'm messing around.
Yeah.
Fred.
Yes.
Your sister is still living?
Yes.
And she helps you some?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't. She takes me around in the car. I would. I had to give up my driver's license 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And now my eyesight's giving me a little trouble. I have to sit about 2 feet from a television set to see that. And I'm trying to find somebody to check out my amplifier on the antenna to my television set, and no, apparently they don't. People today use a satellite for their television.
But you're trying to get improve the signal from a normal antenna.
Right, it's a up until about a week ago, I was getting some good signals, and suddenly I'm getting snow on nearly all the channels, and I have a feeling that it has something to do with the amplifier, either fading or...
Don't they have cable connections out there, Fred?
We don't have cable out this far where I am. We're sort of out in the country.
In the country?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, we're on the edge of the city.
Old RF man like you should be able to get that all figured out, though.
Well, I have a bad knee, so I can't climb around too much. I have to wear a brace.
Apparently, you're not playing tennis anymore, Fred.
No. But my sister is at 87.
Yeah.
Did you get the document that Ed put together with you?
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. Whoever designed that cover deserves an Oscar or Emmy or something. That's a beautiful cover.
That's one of the guys back here, John Sconard, put that together.
Oh, really? Yeah, that was outstanding.
Friend, he's also our English editor. He makes sure we don't say ain't or all the other bad words in the language.
He was a college English teacher before he came to work here in the publications department 23 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
He's had a little practice.
Fred, have you ever said anything about the honey wagon?
No. That was the last product of the ERA, I think.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember a whole lot about it.
Were you the marketing guy on that one?
No.
Oh, okay.
Fred, did you ever keep in... When I joined ERA in 1953, you did Antenna Coupler Marketing, but also Fred Lang joined us on some of the trips.
Right.
Remember Fred, and was he involved in the... He and Ken Dean were involved in the coupler for a while as well.
Ken Dean was. I don't remember Fred Lang having... Too much.
Maybe it was. We went down to Boeing, Wichita. I think it was 1954, and Fred Lang was with us for some reason. We had a meeting with the coupler group. We were going through these big EVA tests at the time.
Oh yeah, okay. The main thing I remembered was when I was asked to go down to Wichita and raise the price of the coupler. And Bill Norris says, well, Fred, just go down and leave a little blood on the floor and then come home.
Well, Fred, the customer liked you so well, they just built their tongue and absorbed it. Well, they had no choice.
Oh, I think you're all exaggerating my influence.
Oh, I remember, this was really a success story on our part with Boeing because this was Boeing Seattle now. They were unhappy with the price raises in the coupler. So they went out to a small company that had a better idea to...
Up in New England.
To tune antennas.
Granite City or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And it failed miserably. And... When they came out with one of the probe antennas, they were using this coupler and it couldn't tune down below 3 megahertz. So we took one of our couplers and we said, well, we got to make that inductor larger. So we just put in a series of ferrite coils around it, and it increased the inductance enough so it could tune down to 2 megahertz, and that saved Boeing from a very large embarrassment on meeting a customer requirement. And after that, our business with them was assured.
Yeah.
This was a competitor's thing you fixed for them?
Yeah, we saved them because they had committed to have this new company build this fancy new concept in tuning antennas, and it failed.
So Fred, we've done a number of interviews, both Oral and Legacy, and one of the questions we always like to ask people is, when you got started in the computer business, did you have any idea where it would lead you?
No, because I knew I'd just come back from an illness. I worked for for about a year with Martin in their Baltimore. It was outside of Baltimore. I can't remember now. But I worked in their antenna section, but I was coming back from the war, World War II. Things during that time had moved so fast that I really should have gone back to school. And then I got sick and had to leave my Martin Baltimore job, and went around to a whole lot of hospitals, clinics, trying to see what was wrong with me. And
well, whatever they did, Fred, it lasted.
Right, yes. Yeah, the Mayo Clinic was my hometown, and that's where I had some attention by some good doctors.
Good. Yeah, my wife was at the Mayo Clinic 3 out of the last 4 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and she had some surgery done in the cities here, and 11 tries at fixing her hip. So we said, we're going to the Mayo Clinic, and Dr. Hansen said that the worst case he'd ever saw was the person had 46 surgeries before he fixed it.
Oh, my gosh.
Mayo Clinic's doctors fix things no one else can.
Wow.
Well, if you look back on your career, what would you have done differently?
Nothing. I mean, I guess I really wound up with some awfully good friendships, and the coupler team was one of them. I don't know. We had reunions in the coupler for many years after. The program moved back to Spring Marine in Virginia.
We moved it down there in 1970, and I went back there in 1984 for some fiber optic technology meeting, and the coupler was still going strong there for on the T3C.
Oh, well.
Plus those commercial airlines that still use the old coupler.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I remember the one thing about its durability was a B-52 crashed in Minnesota, and the coupler was still in one piece, and they brought it back. I think Bob Brown brought it back to the lab, and the thing still works.
I remember that made the newspaper somewhere.
Yeah,
that was rockability.
I don't remember what year that was, but that was quite a demonstration of quality.
Yeah, well, they're still flying those B-52s.
Yes.
They never give up.
Right. Yeah, that's been a long time.
Well, the last event that you must remember, because I think Lockheed remembers it, shortly after we won the T3C program, you came out with us to one of the engineering meetings, and some of the engineers knew about you coming, so they arranged this Fred Hargesheimer Day, where they had sort of a ceremony for you, that you had returned to Lockheed from your World War II contributions.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Was,
you had something written up in the house organ about.
Yes, right.
Isn't this unique?
But, I think they overdid it. I didn't do anything that somebody else wouldn't have done if they had been in the same position.
Well, I remember the relationship we had with Lenny Green at Boeing, who sort of headed up the communication systems for Boeing. And I don't know if you went out with us when we installed antenna coupler equipment in Air Force One.
No.
Andrews Air Force Base, but anyway, Len Green was there, and Ernie Griffith and I, you know, checked out the system, and that was quite an experience to go through that aircraft.
Oh, yeah.
They had six HF systems on that plane. Six of them.
Goodness, yeah.
Dennis.
Well, the thing I remember about, they used to call me, the delivery schedule was one of the big problems, and they used to call me at home right in the middle of dinner to see what I could do to speed things up.
Well, that's the salesman's role, a handholder,
expediter.
Yeah, the real problem was if we didn't get delivery on time from our subcontractors, there was no way we could speed up the production.
Was a lot of that subcontract work machine
yes.
made?
Right, and then of course when the thing I remember about weight reduction, we had to drill holes in all the gears in order to reduce the weight by just a few ounces. And then when I had my first ride in the 707 Western Airlines out of Kansas City, and they came on board with all this heavy dining glasses and ceramic cups for coffee, and when I think of all the effort our engineering team went to reduce the weight of that coupler.
Well, they explained to me there was a big multiplier for something that was up on the, you know, the tail of the aircraft.
Right, yeah, I know it was in a
big multiplier to what you might put on in the cabin.
Yeah.
So would you say, if you thought back of your experience with Mark Schoquist, that you were mentoring him, and that's the reason he turned out so well?
I look at that. He had all the in-depth engineering talent. And that was the important thing, because we had a tough job there getting that thing down to, what is it, 3 seconds? We had to retune from the highest frequency down to the 2 megacycles in 3 seconds or something.
That tuning time was very important, and being an engineer, you will recognize this. The first thing that the first coupler did was go through a capacitor cycle that sort of determined what the frequency was.
Yeah.
And then, so that was a wasted 3 seconds. So the variable capacitor started out at minimum capacity, and then it went into its own position, and that would recognize what frequency it was, because they had an inductor that loaded it. Well, the first thing I did for the follow-on coupler, I said, well, let's take that 3 seconds out. We'll start the capacitor in at the full capacity position. And that's what we did. Hmm. We had a different method for recognizing frequency.
Okay.
So it was a fun product.
Yes, and then we had to burn in the tubes in the discriminator, I think, if I remember right, to match them.
And then we did something that was unorthodox. We used this Jennings capacitor in a way that it wasn't intended, designed for, and that was we cycled it. I can remember Fran Belt and others going out to Jennings, and old man Jennings was there, and he said, well, you can cycle that, you know, 10,000 times and it won't wear out the baffle.
Hmm.
And that turned out to be true.
Yeah. Oh, after the the war, when some couplers became surplus, I mean, all the ham radio operators in the country were out to get one of those things.
That is still happening. This legacy club that Ole has, where we put everything on the network, people are writing emails saying, how can we buy a surplus coupler and use it to tune our antennas? Still happening.
That's true.
Oh, my goodness.
The other thing I was going to say I have heard that you were a decent salesperson, and I think you must have taught Shokwa something about that, because I worked closely with Mark in the early days of the Canadian Patrol Frigate, which turned into the biggest award that Sperry ever had. And Mark sold the Canadians on the idea of having a passive tap
on a coaxial
cable, which he didn't have a solution for yet, but he but he had a guy, Bill Davis, who was smart and did it.
Yeah, and amazingly enough, the solution was, and you can understand this, is that to get a lot of connections to a coax, you have to make sure that the tap matches the impedance. So Bill Davis came up with a mechanical change to the connector that reduced these reflections, and Amphenol, we got a patent on how Amphenol changed this connector to make that system work.
So I would say he's a pretty good guy.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of working with Mark for several years, and I can say that there were a couple times I thought he was in sales because he was dancing.
Rappernack was the one that did the dancing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you went with us, but on the P3C, Lockheed would host this fall meeting, 3-day meeting down at Monterey in Mexico, and we drink margaritas for 3 days in a row. Bring all their vendors, and one time we all went out. Rappernack was with us to one of the floor shows there, and Rappernack got up and took over from the MC and put on his 30-minute act.
Oh, yes.
Actually happened.
Now, is he still living?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now, but they have a group that meets down in the Los Angeles area?
Phoenix area.
Phoenix,
no.
Wally Emerson's place.
Okay.
Yeah, we interviewed Rappernack about a week ago.
Oh.
And there's emails that go back and forth some with Rap.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had to give away my computer because I couldn't see the icons.
Well, there's a lot less characters here than there used to be. And now that we are part of Lockheed Martin with all the policies and procedures and, you know, forcing us to do the way that God thinks we should, there's going to be less characters in the future, too.
Oh, we're an aircraft company now.
Well, we always thought that the way they attach different antennas to the airplanes, that the main contract should go to electronic company and subcontract to an airframe.
And that actually kind of happened with the P3 award in the 90s, and also what's happening with some of the other awards now, with even the presidential helicopter. We're buying the airframe, and an electronic company is integrating it.
Well, Fred, one of the things we do at this time is we give you an opportunity to say anything you want, and close up with your feelings from your career and what you think of anything you want to talk about.
Well, I guess I'm just thinking about staying alive.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry that I can't be a better interviewee, but...
doing fine.
It was so great to hear Bill and Mark. They meant so much to me in my career. Bill, first, of course, getting me a job with ERA. itself. And Mark was such a real joy and pleasure to...
Well, Fred, you actually made us part of your family, because we stayed... I remember staying overnight with your mother at her apartment in Beverly Hills several times and sat down with family dinners with you.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it was real joy. And these friendships have lasted a long time. We have a local producer that's making a video, but he's been working at it for 8 years now. So I don't know if it's ever going to be finished.
What's the subject that he's working on?
Well, the title is, he's working on my experience with the schools in New Guinea. We now have two schools we're working with, in a total of 500 students. And one of our students has a master's, former students, has a master's degree from the University of Sydney in Australia, which we're very proud of. And,
do you happen to know, or can you give us that person's name, the producer's name?
Yeah, Greg Schiffner.
How do you spell it?
S-C-H-I-F-F-N-E-R.
Do you have a phone number for him?
Yeah. Let's see if I can read it without my... I have an interesting gadget for people with impaired vision. I call it Video Eye. And this is a camera that projects down on whatever you're reading and then converts it to electronics and comes out on a terminal, a video, a monitor, I should say, and it has a zoom control so that you can increase the size of the letters, whatever you need to be able to read. Now I can read about 22-point print, so that, but one of the laws of physics takes place, and the larger you, the most you enlarge the print, then of course that reduces the size of the field of vision. And so you get down to the point where you're just reading one or two letters, or one or two words at a time. That makes pretty long reading.
We had heard somewhere that you know, you were on the Jack Parr show, and that some people were trying to get you on the Oprah Winfrey show.
Yeah, we would love that, because I'm sure... the way Oprah rewards her interviewees, she can really do a lot for our school, and she's interested in the school, but I don't know why we can't get on that. Anyway, Greg Schiffner's...
So is this something that Greg Schiffner is trying to help you with, or who's trying to help you do that?
No, I a couple of people in New Guinea have sent in something. We thought we had a direct contact with Oprah, but at the time we tried to reach her, there was a terrible weather thing in the Indonesia where her boyfriend was attending with another friend, and they were on the roof of a beach house when the storm hit them, and one of them was washed away and is gone. And of course, she was quite upset about that, and we think maybe that was the time we submitted some video and a copy of my book, and I don't think it ever reached her production guy. You know, yeah, that's when secretaries are very important, because if you can't get by the secretary, you're not going to succeed. Anyway, let's get, I can ring you here. Shit.
We've got address that you can, you know, send something in to make suggestions to Oprah. And so we were thinking about having some people do that.
Oh, yeah, I could send you some extra copies of the book. You could. Oh.
And we probably, we got some pretty clever people in this room. I'm talking about Mark and John Westgren. But we probably could figure out some way to get to the secretary and get around her somehow.
Well, let's see, I have Ed's address. I can send a couple of books so they can...
Sure, yeah, that's fine. Do it. And we can talk about this further, you know, after we've got the idea planted now, trying to do something.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I'm trying to read the... FCH.
How many minutes does the tape go?
You could probably get it on a white page. That number. He lives in Sacramento.
Well, here's the number. All right, 530 is the area code.
Okay.
26. Oh, nuts. No. 265.
Yeah.
3638.
And this is the phone number for
Greg Schiffner.
Greg Schiffner. Schiffner.
Correct. Affirmative.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, Fred, and I don't know you, but these two guys that do know you well are creditable guys, so if they think you're okay, I do too.
Thank you.
So, thank you, Fred.
Oh, thank you for letting me have all this time with Mark and Bill. It's been made my day for sure.
Good luck, Fred.
Come and see us, Fred.
Thank you.
Drink some of that wine out there.
All right.
Hey, I heard you might be coming back here this year to visit some relatives or something.
Yes.
When would that be?
Well, I... before the snow.
Better hurry up.
Yeah, I guess so. But I'll be getting in touch with them if I do get to go.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you, Fred.
Thanks. We're signing off here.
Okay. Bye.
Over and out. Mm-hmm.